folks, boards, where folks have to challenge boards and pass tests or whatever it is that they have to do, written or verbal, so that they can pass whatever minimum requirements are, so that they can practice whatever type of medicine is that they do. Usually, once you get the license, you get some type of certificate, some type of credential that you can hang up so everybody can see that the board that governs this type of medical, whatever it is, modality, is that they put their stamp of approval on this person. So it's giving credence. Well, so the board is putting their stamp of approval, their endorsement, their validation of said person. Well, that's what God was trying to do with Moses. He was equipping him with these signs, with these works that he was going to do, these acts that he was going to do that was going to validate who he was and that he was actually speaking for God. So what's in your hand? It was a rod. What about your hand? He put that hand inside and come out with leprosy, put it back in, come out clean. And then he said, there's one other thing I'm going to do for you. That's down in verse 9. And it should come to pass, if they will not believe also these two signs, neither hearken unto thy voice, that thou shalt take of the water of the river and pour it upon the dry land, and the water which thou takest out of the river shall become blood upon the dry land. And again, God's just equipping him, giving him these signs, kind of like a badge, showing that he really was speaking for God. By the way, when we go tell people about something, you know what a badge is? It's right here. This is a badge. God said he blessed his word. It's not our words that make a difference, it's his. He gave us his word so that we could take his word to others, and giving his word, it validates who we are when we preach his word. But anyway, so who am I? Who are you? Who will receive me? And then he goes to the fourth excuse. What can I say? What can I say? And that's in verse 10. Down there in Exodus 4:10. Let's see here if our amens are working today. Here we go. A few. All right. So when I take a drink, you're supposed to say amen. All right. Exodus 4:10, it says, and Moses said unto the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore, nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. It's interesting. He says, I'm a slow of speech and of a slow tongue. Slow, it's used twice in this verse, but it's only translated slow these two times. Every other time that word's ever used, it's usually translated a little bit different. There's Hebrew words behind these English words we're reading. And so when we come across this, he says it's a slow speech. Well, usually it's a different word. Exodus 18:18, for instance, says this, thou wilt surely wear away. This is Moses' father-in-law talking to him. Thou wilt surely wear away both thou and this people that is with thee, for this thing is too heavy. There's our word. Too heavy for thee. Thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Remember, he was answering everybody's question. Anybody had a question, he would stand there as the judge and sit there, and everybody would bring their question to him. And his father-in-law says, man, you can wear yourself out. You need to get some help. You need to get some other folks to help. And he said, this thing is too heavy for thee. It's too hard for you to do it by yourself. You need to get somebody else. Genesis 41:31. And the plenty shall be known in the land by reason of that famine fowling, for it shall be very, here's our word, grievous. Grievous. So something that's very heavy or something that's very difficult or very problematic, that's what Moses was having. It was hard for him to speak publicly. He had a difficult time speaking in public. He didn't have the gift of gab. I'm really jealous of folks. If I'm not prepared, I can't just get up and just let it fly. Somebody said, some of these preachers, they said, boy, you're just supposed to pray and ask God, put words in your mouth and open your mouth and just flow out. It doesn't work for me. It never has. And by the way, I've heard messages like that, and I'd rather have the fellow that studies. But nevertheless, some folks say, you're just supposed to stand up there, and some people can. Brother Block comes to mind. That guy can talk for hours to a telephone pole and have a good conversation. I'm not able to do that. I have to have something before me. I have to have some kind of outline or some kind of words to remind myself of what I'm saying. But that's where Moses was. Moses said, I can't speak well. I have a hard time speaking. It's hard for me to get up and try to speak to somebody. I don't think I can do that. What can I say? I can't do it. He didn't have the gift of gab. He didn't have that command of language. He didn't have that advanced articulation gene like some folks have. Bro Blackburn, if you remember Bro Blackburn years ago, he's another one that could go up to a fence line, and just talk all day long. Never miss a beat. Just go right along. Not everybody's got that. Well, Moses was one of those that did not have that. Now, God points out that it was he which made his mouth. God said, I made your mouth. I created your mouth. I fashioned your mouth. I'll take care of it. You just need to go. We'll take care of the words. You don't even worry about it. We'll put words in your mouth, but you got to go. And by the way, God knows if God gives you a job, he already knows you can do it, even if you think you can't. Even if you think you're not qualified, even if you think you're not quite up to it, if God put it before you, he put it there for a reason. He figures you can get it done. You know, somebody said if God brings you to it, he'll see you through it. If he puts it in your way, obviously he meant for you to do it. If God enlists you, he'll empower you to get it done. If God calls you, he'll complete you. He'll do it. He'll even if you don't have that gift of gab now, it'll come. You know, Brother Jack Hollis, I heard him say, I don't know how many times when he was younger, he couldn't do any public speaking at all. He became one of the best pulpiteers the country's ever seen. I think God did that. So, he says, I can't speak very well. I have this hard time speaking, especially in front of others. It's hard for me. Well, God can do stuff. You just need to let him worry about that. You just do what it is before you, and God will take care of it. Early 1800s, there was a Sunday school teacher. During the week, his job, he was a door-to-door tea salesman in England. There you go. While he was doing this, while he was going door-to-door selling tea, he'd take the opportunity to pass out tracts from his Sunday school class and representing his church and going up passing these tracts out. The Sunday school teacher also, he would read many theological books. He was trying to get all God he could get while he was studying. Again, this is early 1800s. And the Sunday school teacher, he encouraged his son to do the same. He tried to put this love for books, and especially the Bible and theological books, he tried to put this into his son. And his son learned, he learned to have a love for reading. And so he started reading theological books, and he also read scientific books. In fact, he ended up in medical school, and his desire was he wanted to be a doctor in China. He wanted to be a Chinese missionary and be a physician. That's what his desire was. But at the time he was about ready to go into China, the first opium war broke out, and he wasn't able to go. Well, about that time, he ran across the famed missionary Robert Moffat. Robert Moffat was a missionary to Africa, and Robert Moffat recruited this young doctor for South Africa. And then this is the son of a Sunday school teacher. This Sunday school teacher spent his life selling tea, reading theological books, and passing out tracts. Did this, invested his life into his son. And here comes this son, and he can't go to China, but Robert Moffat recruits this young doctor for South Africa. And to Africa he went. And it was never an easy road. In fact, there were times when he'd go out into the bush, as they would call it down there, and he'd get lost. No one would know where he was. He'd be out there for months at a time. And it wasn't easy, it wasn't simple, it wasn't painless, But God had put this on his heart, and he believed full well that this is what God wanted him to do for his life for God. He mapped a lot of the portions of Africa. He said, who was that? Dr. Livingston, I presume. Dr. Livingston. He was the son of a Sunday school teacher who invested his life in him and then went out there and did what a lot of people said was impossible, to map out a lot of Africa and to go and preach to the African natives. David Livingston died in 1873 at the age of 60 in present-day Zambia from malaria and internal bleeding due to dysentery. His loyal attendants, Chuma and Susi, removed his heart and buried it under a tree near the spot where he died. The site is now known as the Livingston Memorial. But the idea is, if God puts it before you, he'll get it done. You need to let him work through you, even if you think you're not equipped for it. If God put it before you, he will equip you for what it is he wants you to do. So Moses is here saying, Lord, you know, it's too hard. It's too hard. Well, God counters this with encouragement, verse 11, and the Lord said unto him, who hath made man's mouth? Or who maketh the dumb, or deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore, go, and I will be with thy mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say. So God's trying to encourage Moses. He's trying to push Moses, and I've tried to qualify this before. Moses is having a rough patch in his life here. He's asking all these questions. But once Moses did get his mind in the right place, he became one of the greatest men in all the Bible. So don't think just because we're kind of being hard on Moses at the time, he became this great man. Folks call off the greatest people in the Bible, he'll be in the top, five or six. He became a great man of God, a great leader. So we're kind of talking bad about him this morning. But once things got set, he didn't turn back. So don't take it, since I'm giving him such a hard time this morning, that I'm thinking he's a bad guy. He's a great man. But at this particular time in his life, we can learn something from him. God's telling him to go. I made your mouth. I made your tongue. You just go out there. I'll put the words in your mouth. I'll teach you what you have to say. Just go. Verse 13. Boy, he's been asking all these questions. Who am I? Who are you? Who will receive me? What can I say? He's been asking all these questions, and God has been patient with him. And God has been encouraging him, and he's been exhorting him and kind of leading him along. Verse 13. And he said, this is Moses speaking, O my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him who thou wilt send. In other words, Lord, find somebody else. Find somebody else. I'm afraid I just can't do this. He's asked all these questions, but finally, at the end of all what he's been talking about, he finally says, would you just please send somebody else? Moses is asking God to send someone else, another person, another individual. And notice God's response to that statement. Now, God has been kind. God never has to qualify himself. He just tells what to do, and we're supposed to do it. He never has to qualify himself. Moses has asked all these questions, and God has been very patient. He's been just forbearing with him all this time. And now Moses finally says, would you just find somebody else? The first part of verse 14 tells us what God had to think about, what was thinking about this. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. Again, God wasn't angry with him. He wasn't wroth with him. He wasn't upset with him. All the questions. I mean, he asked question after question after question. And he bore with him and answered all these questions and encouraged him and told, tried to exhort him to keep it moving, keep it going. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to take care of it. But now he says, send somebody else. He says, I can't do it. And I'm not going to do it. Send somebody else. God gets mad. God's angry. I was looking up that word anger. I was kind of laughing to myself when I read the definition of it. properly the nose or nostril, hence the face, and occasionally a person also from the rapid breathing in passion. You know, the nose flaring and the... I mean, that's where God was. Here Moses is. He's been dealing with him. He's been encouraging him, been pushing along. Come on, you can do it. You can do it. You can do it. I'm not going to do it. And God gets mad. You ever see a person lose their temper and they start breathing heavy and the nose starts flared and they get all red in the face? My wife says if she ever gets red in the face, I need to call 911. But you know, I mean, you know, getting mad. Some of you are from Alaska, so you don't know, but that was funny. Anyway, but as long as Moses was considering the job, as long as he was contemplating the job and calculating his mind about what was going to happen, God was okay with that. But now Moses is declining, he's backing out, he's turned God down. God's angry with Moses. It appears we can question God, we can offer excuses and often reasons why we don't think we're qualified, but even at that, we're still supposed to say, okay, God, I don't think I can do this, but if you're going to be with me, okay. I mean, we'll try it. I think you got the wrong guy. But okay, if you'll be with me, I think I'm going to try to do it. That's what we can learn from this. Even if we think we're not qualified to do it, if God puts it before us, we can tell God all day, you know, I think you got the wrong person. I mean, you know, I just don't have the utensils that you think I have. But as long as we try to do it, God's going to be happy with us and he'll go along with us. But once we say, no, God, I'm not doing it. God doesn't take that sitting down. He's not too kindly towards us. He wasn't kind towards Moses. Well, Aaron's coming along. And it's interesting, Aaron comes along about this time, and Aaron, you know, becomes the speaker. God says he's going to make Moses like a god and Aaron like the speaker. So Aaron's going to do the speaking. By the way, he did speak a little bit, but he eventually stopped speaking, and Moses ended up speaking for himself anyway. I mean, he did it anyway. I was reading... I don't know what to think of this. You think whatever you want. I'll read it, and you take what you want. This is from Jewish history. It's not from the Bible, so you take it what you want. This week's parasha, it's a teaching thing, Tetzaveh, begins with God commanding Moses, and as for you, you shall instruct the Israelites to bring you pure olive oil or beaten olives for lighting, for kindling the eternal lamp. Talk about Exodus 27. And when God's giving instructions for the tabernacle. At first glance, it does not appear that there's anything unusual or extraordinary about this verse. It is simply God giving Moses another instruction concerning the Mishkan, or the tabernacle, just as God instructed him last week in their studies that they were doing, and how he was to build it. And so he's talking about God giving him these instructions. Verse 20 gives the instructions about the oil and stuff, but verse 21 in that chapter gives the instructions that Aaron's going to be the high priest. However, it is precisely because God's instructions to Moses have been at the center of the preceding narrative that commentators have questioned why the verse begins, Veta Tetzvah, it's their Hebrew, as for you, you shall command, as opposed to simply Taz, or command, or Tetzvah, you shall command. After all, and as for you, would seem to imply that the previous verse had been addressed or referred to someone else. Another Hebrew teacher chimed in and said, God responded in anger, according to Rabbi Yashi. Moses was actually punished for his reticence, for his unwillingness to do what God wanted him to do. He had been destined to be the progenitor of the line of Kohanim, and that was his son, and Aaron was to be ordinary Levi. Now this designation was reversed. In other words, it appears from the Jewish historian's viewpoint that Moses was in line to be the high priest and be not just the governmental leader, but also the priestly leader and take it all over. But because he said, God, you got to find somebody else, God did find somebody else. Now, he left Moses in charge of the governmental things, the federal jobs, but as far as the church jobs, if you will, the spiritual jobs, he passed that off on to Aaron. He passed off to Aaron. And it's more than just looking at Moses and Aaron. And again, this is a Jewish historian. I don't know what to think about it, but I thought it was interesting. And if you think about it, it might make sense. Here's Moses, the great man he was. Here comes Aaron, Eleazar, and all the rest of his children behind him. All those became these priests and high priests and working for God in the tabernacle, whereas Moses' line were just common Levites. Different. And it appears like at this point, when God got mad and God said, okay, well, Aaron's coming, let him do it. It looks, at least from the Jewish historian viewpoint, they say that the reason how come Aaron became the high priest and not Moses is because of this very thing here. When Moses said, you got to find somebody else. God does that often. He'll give somebody a job, and if they can't do it, he'll find somebody else. Sometimes he gives people a second chance. Jonah comes to mind. Now the word of the Lord came unto Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it, for wickedness has come up before me. You know, in the next couple chapters, Jonah ran the opposite direction. He got thrown overboard, went to Whale University. I mean, he had a tough time. But chapter 3 comes along, the word of the Lord came unto Jonah the second time, saying, arise, go into Nineveh. And of course, he went that time. He got that second chance. He got that second opportunity. He got that second time to go get it done. But not everybody gets that chance. You never know what happens by one decision in your life. It may seem like a small decision that you're making in life, but it may affect the rest of your life, maybe the rest of eternity. Think of salvation, for one. If you don't get saved, you don't get to go to heaven. That's a big decision. But just common decisions, even in our lives. I was reading, Barnes had this to say about that type of thing. Neglect is enough to ruin a man. A man who is in business needs not commit forgery or robbery to ruin himself. He has only to neglect his business, and his ruin is certain. A man who is lying on a bed of sickness needs not cut his throat to destroy himself. He has only to neglect the means of restoration, and he will be ruined. A man floating in a skiff above Niagara need not to move an oar or make an effort to destroy himself. He has only to neglect using the oar at the proper time, and he will certainly be carried over the cataract. Most of the calamities of life are caused by a simple neglect. And what he's referring to is just a particular time in your life when you decide, well, I'm not going to do it. Well, that's where Moses was. And he made the wrong choice. And again, I'm not trying to, don't get me wrong, Moses became this great man, probably one of the greatest men in the Bible. But at this particular time, he's having a rough time. We can learn from that to make proper decisions when we come up with these crossroads. We need to make the proper decisions each time that God's hand will remain upon us. Years ago, there was a foreign officer, he was a pilot, that was training over at Lackland, and he bought a van, and it had cruise control. So he put the cruise control on, and he got out of his seat and went back to the refrigerator and to get a drink. You see, he was a pilot. He was a foreigner. And he got here and he thought cruise control and autopilot, he thought they were the same thing. And he got up out of his chair, out of the driver's seat, and went back to get himself a drink out of the refrigerator. 17 surgeries later, he went through 17 separate surgeries to take care of all the injuries that he taken from that one act, just getting up out of the seat and going back, you know, man. You never know what that's going to do. You need to try to pray and keep in mind what God wants us to do. If God has put something before you, it's not the day to say, well, no, Lord, I don't want to do this. I want to do something else. You better make the right decision. You've got to make the right decisions because you want to go the right way and keep God's blessing on you. I get just two more things to say and we'll be done. Aaron, now, God did allow Aaron to come. But Aaron was an issue. Remember him complaining about his marriage? Him and his sister complained about Moses' marriage? Or how about the golden calf? And I said unto them, whosoever have any gold, let him break it off. So they gave it to me, and then I cast it in the fire, and they came out this calf. Aaron became trouble at times. Now, he got better as time went on, but he was trouble. If Moses would just made the right decision in the first place, things would have turned out a lot different. And it's the same in our lives. You know, going to church, reading your Bible, praying, witnessing, giving, those simple things. If we just make the right type of decisions on a day-to-day basis, God will bless us. We wouldn't be in danger of going off the beaten path and getting in trouble. So hope you learned something from that. And hopefully next time we'll start actually working on the Mosaic Covenant and give you an explanation of the Mosaic Covenant and try to close this covenant out and go for the new covenant for next one. Thank you for coming. We're going to go and pray, and we'll be dismissed. Father.